Hey, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I give a shit. I really do. I really give a shit about you. You know who I really give a shit about today? I want to give a big shout out to is anyone who has a job that where they have to work outdoors. Because I walked past some guys that had the job of like, I don't know what, some kind of job where they had to like do shit on the digging up the sidewalks and crap and putting shit in today on my way over here. And man, I was like, those are real dudes. So shout out to all my pals, male, female, trans, everything that's working outdoors. And that includes service animals. Okay. So first of all, I want you to know that this is Radio Free Brooklyn. And that you should go to our RadioFreeBrooklyn.com homepage and donate money because it's a good thing. It's totally worth it. This is a station that is we don't get paid. We don't make money, but we are growing, and you should be part of it. Get in on it. So anyway, I am so excited about my guest today. Her name is Kelly Dwyer. Hello, Kelly! Woo, 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 woo,
woo. I am so happy to be here.
And I am so happy to have you here. So,
It's my pleasure.
No. It's my fucking pleasure.
The pleasure's all yours.
But I got the pleasure. I'm winning. That's one for me.
I like our wrestling voices that we immediately went to.
I like that we didn't get all girly about it and go like, you're the best. No, that's what girls do, but not me and Kelly, because we're hard asses.
We're tough bitches. Fucking bitches. I'm not gonna lie about it.
No.
You gotta be in this city, am I right?
You gotta be, if you're gonna be on this fucking planet and survive.
Yeah. You gotta get your girl balls on.
Yeah, we got them on.
The coolness.
I feel mine too.
Do you? Especially because they're sweating like a bitch today.
Yeah, no kidding. Anyway, before I forget, so we have a call-in number. So once Kelly and I gets going, you can call in. And the number is 718-928-9732. That's 718-928-9732. Or you can go to the contact page on Radio Free Brooklyn, look it up.
Correctamundo.
But I also, as I told Kelly, I just want to put out there that it's my father-in-law's 87th birthday today, and the family is out in New Jersey celebrating them.
They're having a rave, from what I gather, like glow sticks and...
Yeah, well, he's super into trance, you know.
Totally. Why wouldn't he be?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he's in a few experimental programs with the MDMA and stuff like that.
You know, most 87-year-olds are in a trance. He is into trance. You know?
Right, exactly. So, my whole family, really, you know, all the children and nephews, it's a big trance. We have trance raves. We don't have, like, Thanksgiving. It's just shit like that. But anyway, so they're in a restaurant in New Jersey, and I told them to call in. So this could happen between 2 and 3, and if they like. So this could happen at any moment, and I told Kelly, and she's been really generous about being open to that possibility. But you're also welcome to come in, call in. But please be on topic, not just to happy birthday. So Kelly and I were trying to figure out what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about her because that's why she's here, and that's what I want to talk about. But I thought what I would start is by giving my impression of Kelly and our relationship. So anyway, Kelly and I have been in the same atmosphere for quite a while, more than, I don't know when I first saw you perform, maybe over 5 years ago, probably.
Probably. Yeah, I think so.
I don't know when.
We've been circling each other's
atmosphere for a while. And we have never hung out really, right, Kelly? You and me? No. I get the impression that we have a lot of mutual respect and affection. That's for sure, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm just going to say that what stands out in my mind is that you are a special performer to me in a bunch of ways. But one of them that stands out is your work ethic and your ability to make things happen for yourself. And also how good you are at promotion and just professionalism in general. So, I mean,
the hustle machine, I like to call it.
Besides the fact that you're, you know, obvious, I mean, you're enormously talented, you're funny and musically talented and all that. You're also a great example of what, and I think an inspiration probably to a bunch of people about what it is to be a professional performer working on your own, right? Do you know what I'm saying? You've heard this before, probably, right? Come well, on, Kelly, never... don't be modest.
I can never hear it enough times, okay. Lisa. But I've heard that, and I do work really hard, and I also want to create a sort of atmosphere for the artists that I do know in my life, that they feel listened to, and they feel like they have the ability to go do the same thing, and sort of, you know, mm-hmm. one of my goals is to actually inspire other artists. So
yeah, it's working. It's definitely worked here.
Yeah, I think didn't check that one off the list. Now let's go back. You know, now I'm gonna work on me time.
So yeah, let's get back to you. And also the other thing that I think is really positive that you create the image of having a very loving relationship with your husband in a very direct and real way, not in a gooey look at me and St. Bart's way. just a very genuine, honest way, which I also think is really good, because I think a lot of performers think like, oh, I'm a crazy performer, I'm not going to ruin it by having a good, stable relationship. And that's just not true.
I actually think that this is something I've said before, and I try to say it as often as I can. I believe that when I found stability in my life with my husband, and meaningful stability, not just like I'm settling for someone who can, you know, give me this or that, like real, you know, intimate, you know, space where I can truly be myself at home and feel taken care of, and also mm-hmm. to care for him, I think that my art immediately started growing, and I actually got more comfortable taking risks because at home I could have stability. So I don't think you need to be a crazy lunatic to make great art. I think that it's, you know, there's all sorts of inspiration that comes from life. And being able to hone in and focus on that vision is half the battle, because you can't sit down and think about it or write about it or sing about it or you know, or book the shows or find the people or get the venue or whatever, then you can't, then you're sitting, you know, sitting jerking off in your house all day. So.
Yeah, which some people, you know, not that there's anything wrong with
that. Not that there's anything, not at all.
And if you can do a webcam and get paid for it, it's, all the better.
Yeah, heck yeah.
So anyway, so Kelly's already like, I think you've done it, Kelly. I think you've really like set out a really great example, and we're done now.
All right, well, let's
that
just,
was so great.
Let's just go okay, and have a
so,
beer.
So yeah, let's just take the rest of the 45 minutes off. Talk amongst yourself. So Kelly and I, we haven't really worked out what the direction that this conversation is going to go in, which is kind of cool. So we're going to just, because we're comfortable, we're going to work it out right here and then include you guys in the process. Maybe they can call in now if you want.
Yeah.
Yes, somebody could influence it. But so Kelly, so these are the things that I was thinking that would be interesting to discuss with you. I was thinking that we could discuss something that is going on in your life right now that is taking up a lot of your psychic energy that we could help work through. We could discuss your past if people aren't really aware of it and how you got to do what you do. Which isn't quite as interesting, but I bet you have a really fucking weird past. But you know what?
I do.
You do. So maybe we could just get a sentence about that before you get off the air. But and then the other thing, I had this question that I thought of that says, what kinds of thing, is there something that you, what is the kind of thing that you worry about that other people think that they probably don't know? Because I think that's a really good way to... what's the word, to like to dissemble that or to neutralize. Like we all, this is something I was thinking about. We all have things that we worry about, right, about ourselves that we don't talk about because we're so worried and humiliated by them. But when we air them, they become kind of neutralized. So that was a thought I had, but what do you think? You can free associate. You don't have to decide in the second. Ooh. What do you think? Think it through.
I have a few things, actually, that immediately came to mind. One that I'm struggling with, and it is taking up a lot of energy, and I think they're connected.
Okay.
So this is good.
Okay, great.
Three things. The first thing is that I'm finding myself having a harder time being an outgoing sort of... I'm feeling like a homebody more often lately, and I feel like I can't go out and just be out and totally get out of being outside of my house, get what I need out there right now, because I'm having social anxiety. And it's a growing, it feels like it's getting worse and rather than better, which you'd think as I got older and I'm more used to just being out and about, the social anxiety seems to be a little much right now. I'm kind of freaking out. Yeah.
Really? Who would guess that Kelly Dwyer, if you met this effervescent person, you would never see? No one thinks that you have social anxiety.
No. And I will never I will never act like that while I'm out.
Right. You know how to you seem like you're good at putting on a face.
Yeah. Gotta.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's important to. I, as much as I feel like it's important to be honest with your audience, I think it's also like part of the, thing that they've come out for is a lot of the time, to be
distracted,
to be distracted, to be sort of happy and excited and, part of something, inspiring and, whether it's dark or it's light. When I get off the stage, if I'm having a conversation with someone, I usually want to stay upbeat and want to be grateful and practice all that, gratitude bullshit that I really do believe in. Mm-hmm. And yet here I am getting kind of shutting down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I find that if I don't drink, that it's so much more exacerbated. And I have been trying to cut back on drinking in just a general way. Mm-hmm. And for instance, I was just in Philly for last weekend and I did two shows. Mm-hmm. And I, not only on stage, but offstage, I felt like both places I was sort of like not having a good time at all.
Really?
Because I wasn't, God, I hate to say it, but I wasn't drinking really. And, I'm like, God, have I been having fun on stage? Because I get to drink and it kind of releases a sort of freedom inside of me that I can't do it. And now I can't disconnect those two things. Like, I don't think I've always done it that way, but I think that I gave myself permission to drink to, that's part of my persona. I'm a sort of a, if anyone's ever seen me perform, I'm sort of like, controlling, drinking, loud, obnoxious to an extent.
I mean, I think a lot of performing people identify with drinking.
Yeah.
Like Chelsea Handler does. But, when I heard an interview with her, she only really drinks on the weekends because she couldn't do her job.
Right.
But she makes it sound. So.
But she has a lot more people to answer to.
And to do her job, help her get her job done. No kidding.
And if she has that responsibility of like a staff, she can't roll in like shit faced,
Yeah. And I think she's a workaholic.
She's just
freaking driven.
Amy Schumer, I've heard, now this isn't something I actually looked up or anything, but I heard she's doing a dry tour right now. I believe in the contract is that everybody has to be not drinking. So I think,
makes sense.
I think it's a struggle. I think it's a struggle with a lot of performers and,
Humanity.
And humanity, yes, exactly. It's not something I want to quit. I'm not like, I actually Googled how to still be fun and not drink, and I really...
I love that.
I didn't find anything. It was odd. It just came up like a blank Google page.
But I guess that could be a good there's your next book.
Just like moderation, and you know, moderating is good.
But. So that's interesting. I mean, these are things I think about myself as well. Yeah. Believe you me.
Yeah.
So there's two things that I'm getting from you, and one is social anxiety, which is, you know, not just not in the mood to socialize or feeling not fun, not comfortable socializing. Mm-hmm. And the other is you sound concerned about your drinking.
A little bit, yeah.
And so I'm wondering if part of that is when you're out and you don't drink, you're also self-conscious that you're not, you're also aware of that you're not drinking, and that's making you, that's putting, you're kind of putting pressure on yourself as well.
I don't feel as like I'm able to just really let myself go to the place where I have had a lot of wonderful things happen. And, you know, maybe not some not so great things, but I'm always willing to take risks in that, mm-hmm. you know, maybe things aren't going to go great in this. I'm not saying that I get, then I should be clear. I do not, you know, get drunk before a performance. What I'll do is like I'll have a drink before and then mm-hmm. I'll, you know, maybe I'll have a drink during. Mm-hmm. And so it's never something where I'm like, I'm just so, I mean, of course, I've been drunk. I have been drunk on stage before.
Yeah, no, but I don't think you could do that.
No, you can't keep doing something like that unless, I don't know.
No, we're not. But so what, let's break it down. What do you consider, like, where, this is no Jesus.
This is no Jesus?
No, no one's been in this.
Are we going to get religious now?
You know what? I have noticed.
The steps, Kelly.
I have noticed, actually, that this is such a common thread through my guests.
Oh, is it?
Yes. I'm sort of wondering if it's me. Like, if I have such a bad or, like, such a concern. I mean, I'm a two drinks often drinker.
And I think that's a great limit.
Don't know. But I'd like to drink less. I think a lot of people would like to drink less, but I'm wondering if it's the people, I'm wondering if it's just so common or if it's like some dynamic I have with the people, like getting the people on my show. But I think it's a very common thread. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, I look around the people that I know in all the arts around, you know, because I've done theater, I've done music, I've done comedy, mm-hmm. I've done performance art, whatever you name mm-hmm. it, right. And I can definitely say without a doubt that some people are either avoiding drinking, are drinking maybe too much, or have totally quit drinking. They're in some kind of process with drinking. They're in some kind of relationship with drinking.
Right. And you're right.
It's almost like another, because I think, you know, daily life in general, yes, you need things. We all medicate to get through. We all do things. We all work out too hard. You know, some people are into that and some people are into whatever they're into.
Right.
But I feel like with, since we mostly work a lot of times in bars, I think it's the correlation is obviously that, you know, when, and you're performing and then you get paid in, usually you
get,
like,
drinks,
we get paid in drinks, you know, it's sort of encouraging a sort of relationship with alcohol and with performing. It's just like you're having a dirty threesome, you know, it's like.
Well, it's also like, I mean, you know, like, I don't, you know, perform out that regularly and certainly nothing like you. And so, like, if you go out to a bar, I could go out for an hour, have my two drinks, an hour and a half, go home, and then be done with it. But if you have, you know, you're going to be in a bar all night because, you know, you're the third one on or you have two shows.
Or you feel also dedicated to staying, hanging out with your
fans
afterwards.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So that's just, you know, that's like 5 hours in a bar, right?
Right. It really is. And then you've got like three shows in a row. And by the third show, you're just a piece of shit, you know?
So what do you consider a lot of drinking? Like, well, what would you consider? Like, what are you trying to cut down from?
Well, this is interesting because I do not keep liquor in my house, mm-hmm. And I do not drink at home. So, mm-hmm. you know, any night that I'm not out performing, for the most part, I mean, unless I go out to someone's birthday or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, or if I really am attending a show, which I also feel is almost a little bit job related in a sense.
Of course.
I'm seeing a friend, but also, you know, seeing shows is part
of your job.
Absolutely. I did not keep liquor in that house. So what happens is just exactly what you said, is like, it's this, you know, have a drink before the show. I maybe have a drink while I'm on stage, and then I'm hanging out with people who have all come to see me. Hopefully there's at least one or a few.
Sure, of course.
And maybe they probably all want to buy me a drink, and that's a nice thing. I wish they would just hand me $6 instead. Sometimes
you should do that.
Well,
yeah. We should. That's a great idea.
Some sober comedians have said that before to me when I had my alter ego show. They said, well, I'm not going to drink a drink. Can you just give me the money? And I felt like, well, the venue was giving me the drink tickets.
Yeah, that's stupid. That's rude.
Yeah, but you know what? No, I respected it to an extent, because you ask for what you're worth. And of course, if I have to say no because I can't dish out my cash from my own pocket, it's one thing. But you know what? I always did it because I respected that so much that they... That is their worth, you know, and if it's not wrong to demand, or not demand, but to ask for what you deserve.
Yeah, so I guess so. Yeah,
I kind of respected it. Although, you know, if everyone suddenly got sober, I would have been like, oh, shit, you know, I'm like, buying me.
So are we talking like a 5-drink night?
Oh, man, you know, if I get into a real night of a bender kind of, mm-hmm. what happens is that, like, by the third drink or fourth,
mm-hmm.
generally speaking, I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to party.
So you can drink. You're capable
of
drinking a lot. Now, is there any alcoholism or drinking issues in your family?
You know, my parents were always a. It's funny. I can remember my dad calling his glass of vodka and water. It's called see-through. He's like, I'm gonna make a see-through. Or a vodka and tonic, which I thought was one word for the longest time, vodka and tonic. I didn't know what it was. And I'm like, I just knew that mommy and daddy would come home from work and they would have one or two drinks. They weren't like super...
So they were like casual...
Yeah. They were like, hey, let's take a load off. We worked our butts off from
all
day.
They had a cocktail after work,
yeah.
Drinkers.
Cocktail hours, totally normal, totally acceptable. Uh-huh. No one I know...
You never saw them like wasted.
I saw my mom drunk once.
Once, that's nothing.
Well, you know, I know I've seen her more, but the one I'm bringing up is something that kind of sticks out in my head, because I was a kid and we were at a neighbor's party, and my mom is the coolest. My mom is just a cool lady.
Sure.
And we have a complicated relationship, but I will say she was just having a good time, and it was a, you know, our next door neighbors, wasn't like they were driving, but I saw, seeing her drunk, like, really brought out something like upsetting, and I was very upset. And she, I remember confronting her about it, you know, during or at the party or after the party or sometime around it. And she said, you know, you have zero right to come at me, you know, about this, because you have no idea. And I am having a good time. I'm not driving. I'm not, you know, like, she was.
How old were you?
My guess is like maybe 8 or 9.
That's pretty young. I mean, that's like, I don't think that's a great thing to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she didn't, like, she wasn't soothing with you about it.
Well, my mom's not a real soothing lady. She's more of a hard ass, and I get a lot of my toughness from her. My dad is more of a tender type.
Right.
And sometimes I think those roles were reversed to an extent.
Yeah, sure. So is Craig, does he drink?
Not really. Like, he'll have a couple beers here and there. Like,
but he doesn't go out with you regularly?
No. I mean, gosh, the poor guy. I mean, if he had to go out to my show.
No, but, you know, some people, you know, Phil loves going everywhere. No, but,
yeah.
you know, but
oh,
I
yeah.
mean, we don't, I'm not out performing anyway. I mean, an art opening or something like that.
Yeah, four
deal.
Nights a week when I'm doing this
yeah,
show.
Yeah, all night, 5 nights, or 4 or 5 nights where you're out at bars and it's performing and performers.
And
yeah, Phil
you
wouldn't.
Think I've got social anxiety.
No.
He's a very private kind of, he's a very sweet, you know, he likes to be with me, and that's his jam. You know, like hanging out with me, hanging out with my dog, hanging out in the apartment, doing his stuff.
How does he feel about your drinking?
You know, he's Craig.
Do you think he's aware of it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Interesting. I'll just use this as an example. And it was a performance. It ended up being a performance art piece. And it's so odd that I thought of it during what was probably one of the drunkest I've ever been, but this was maybe 5 or 6, I would say 6 years ago, and I had gone out, and I had actually had an enema. No, not an enema, a colonic, and I never had one of those before.
Oh,
and
same thing, kind of, right?
Yeah, never will have one of those
cleaning
again.
That butthole out.
God, it was just so weird, but I just thought it was like, oh, I'm going to feel so skinny and like healthy.
Oh, yeah, I know.
But the weirdest part is that I went out that night and got, the same night, and got, and drank so much, so you don't have any of the bacteria or any of the stuff, the good stuff either in your intestines.
Did you get really wasted?
So I was just blot out and, you know, and I was in, standing in the middle of the street, and I was like, I knew I had called Craig to come pick me up, and he was coming to get me, and then, you know, people are honking at me because I'm standing in the middle of the street, and they're, and Craig, like, calls me on the phone, and he's like, I'm, like, 2 cars behind the one that's beeping at you, get out of the street, so he takes me home, and apparently this is the same night I drunk dialed my father, which is, I use that in a song as well. I left him.
Well, you're getting good material.
Real fun message that I thought I was leaving for Craig. So can you imagine? I called my dad.
Hot.
Thinking, yeah, oh, Jesus. Oh, anyway, we'll get back to that in a second. So he takes me home, and I know, I can feel that this is going to be bad. And I said, you know, I want you to videotape me, you know, for the next hour and a half or whatever.
Right.
And so he did, and it ended up being the video for my... my song called Mock Bottom.
Oh, awesome. Is it on YouTube?
It is on YouTube.
Okay, we're going to check that out when we get home. Or you can check that out at home, folks.
Yeah, Killy the Kid Vids.
All right, I'm going to that sounds great.
And it just happened to go great with it. But it was funny, for a long time, I used it as a performance art piece where I would play the video on stage and behind me while I would sort of get ready for the night to go out. Like, I was sort of mimicking the idea of, oh, this is going to be the most fun night ever. Would and then behind me is like the outcome of the night, which I thought was sort of a cool juxtaposition. And then it ended up being the video for Mock Bottom, but you know, so yeah, he's seen me at my worst.
It's not interfering with your marriage, I guess.
No.
Okay. I just want to say we're at Radio Free Brooklyn, and you're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit with my guest Kelly Dwyer.
Yay.
And we're having fun talking about drinking, almost as fun as drinking itself.
Yay.
Not really, but we're talking about like you can really, I mean, you can binge drink. So is binge drinking like more than once a week? Could it be more than once a week?
No, I'm at about, like, I have gotten it down to about once a week.
Okay.
Or less, maybe once every couple weeks.
Okay, and then, like, when you're out drinking, it's, like, 3 drinks, maybe?
Yeah,
Something like that.
I can go out and have a pretty good time. Sometimes I'll partake in the weed, although that does not do the same thing for me. You know, it's not... Like, unfortunately, like, a lot of people are able to quit drinking because they love smoking weed, and it doesn't have the same effect.
I know, it's usually one or the other that people gravitate towards.
Yeah.
It's just brain chemistry, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, so, I want to get back to what we were talking about, which is, like, you having social, like, what our goal would be if we had, like, another, like, you know, couple of sessions would be to, or like maybe another 6 months.
Or let's just face it, a lifetime.
Certainly more than the half an hour we have left, unless there's a magic force in that
can
air.
We just fast
this
forward
is Radio
this?
Free Brooklyn. Maybe there is.
It's magic.
We're in the basement of the Velo bike shop. Anything's possible.
I'll tell you, I've told you more in this half hour than I've told my therapist in the last 3 weeks. So
wow, that's pretty good.
There you go.
That's pretty good. That's because they don't talk. So anyway, what the goal would be if I was your shrink for real, would be to get you to maybe get to where you could have that 2, maybe 3rd glass of wine, and you would feel just as much fun as if. Like you weren't worrying about drinking. Is that a real possibility for you?
I think I can work towards that. And I think, like, just as someone who is like, well, I'm just going to quit. I think it's fine to say, well, I'm just going to learn to moderate. Like, I think it's a goal that's attainable. I just I probably have been on that road for a little while, and mm-hmm. I think I'm getting mm-hmm. there with it, because I don't drink at home anymore, and I mm-hmm. generally don't binge when I'm just hanging out with people. Mm-hmm.
It's also really good that you're talking about it now, because it's kind of we're looking at it, and we're making it real, so that. Right. In the least judgmental way, please, you know, I mean, yeah. no judgment here. Yeah. So we're like looking at it. We're making friends with it, right? Let's pet it. My desire to cut down on my drinking is very nice. We've just embraced it. Mm. So, isn't that cheesy? Jesus, did I really?
I don't know, but
that was a little cheesy. But that's okay.
I'm giving kisses on the snoot now.
Oh, shut up!
It was your.
It was my. Yeah, it was my digression. I know. So anyway, so it's good that we're talking about it, but so I want to hear what the social anxiety is like. Like, mm-hmm. what happens? Is it like, are there people like this? I mean, I feel this a lot. Like, if I'm at a thing where I want to get to know people or do know people, I'm worried about who I'm going to talk to and who can I make an impression on. Is it that, or is it like, what does it look like? When you say social anxiety, what do you think of? What comes to mind?
I'm not worried about impressing people or having, you know, what I'm worried about is sort of.
You work.
Being good to them and making sure that they feel like appreciated in a way and validated for supporting me, I think.
Interesting. So are those friends or people that come to see you, just to see you?
It's really both, because, you know, let's face it, a lot of my friends are my fans and my fans are my friends, and there's two things, sort of there's a blurred line there.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I find it difficult, especially after a show. I don't know if you've ever been like this, but it's kind of like...
Oh, wow. Hello?
We have a call.
Hello?
Hello, Lisa. You know who this is?
Yeah, it's Walter Buehler, my father-in-law. Yay. You're on the air. You're on Radio Free Brooklyn with my guest, Kelly Dwyer. What?
You're mistaken. It's Walter the Great.
Walter the Great. That's my father-in-law for
Happy
you.
Happy birthday to you.
You're only 87, right? You're only 87
no,
now?
No, I'm 88.
88? Yeah.
You have to go back to school to add
here. Oh. No, you're right. I have to go back to school for everything. Are you kidding? So are you having a nice time? Are they treating you nicely? Is your
Very nicely.
Yeah.
Exceptionally nice.
Yeah?
Well, they should. It's your birthday.
Yeah, this is going to cost me big time, I'll tell you.
Yeah, because you're going to pay the bill, right? You always pay the bill.
Don't pay the bill. Skate out of there.
Who else is there? Is Joanne there? Is Russ there?
Joanne is there, and my granddaughter is here.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We have to get Lindsay on the phone. We have to get Lindsay. Give me Lindsay.
Hold on.
Lindsay.
Hi.
Hi, Lindsay. This is my niece, Lindsay Kelly, and everybody out there.
Hi, Lindsay.
She is so gorgeous and smart and lovely and motivated. She's going to be like some kind of like big deal, like some kind of nurse that's like a doctor or some shit like that. I don't know, Lindsay. I don't understand this stuff.
Lindsay, I have this little pain in my hand.
I love it. Thanks, Auntie Lisa. You're making me feel good about myself.
Okay, Lindsay, you know what? I saw on Facebook some picture of some barbecue that you were all at, and your dad. Was this your dad wearing a like tie-dyed Grateful Dead T-shirt and a stupid hat?
Probably, yeah.
Was that your dad? Are you embarrassed? Aren't you embarrassed? I never saw him dressed like that. He looked ridiculous.
Was he stuck in
1978? Leave him alone.
Oh.
You probably couldn't see his matching tie-dye socks in the picture either, but you're probably there.
Ah, you're so good. So is everything good?
Yeah, everything's good.
Everything's good. Yeah? Did you finish lunch yet?
Yeah, of course we did. Yeah. We're the Buellers. We finished in like probably 58 minutes.
Oh, well, Phil's the fastest eater ever, right? Come on, it's true. It's true.
He was slow today.
He was
slow today.
Really? Yeah. He must have been pulling his phone out a lot.
Has there been cake yet? Has there been cake?
Oh, Dad, did you guys have dessert or cake?
I want cake. Save me a piece.
We had fruit.
You had fruit.
Going healthy.
They're all healthy.
Nice. Nice.
All right. Well, I think we should get back to
have a Jameson for
the regular programming.
The regular programming. But
all right, well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, love to you. I love you. I love you, Lindsay, and I love everybody there.
I love you too, Lindsay.
Love you guys too. Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
All right. You know, Lindsay was the bridesmaid. Were you the bride?
The flower girl.
You were the flower girl. That's right.
Aww.
Yeah.
How long ago?
6 years ago.
Six
Remember
years.
That? Hey, the film
was,
got
I
our
was
film.
Like 21.
Did Phil tell you our film is in the Bushwick Film Festival?
I heard. I'm glad. Phil
yeah, it's a big deal.
With the little people before he, you know, becomes a big superstar.
Yeah, it's a big
after
deal.
The Bushwick Film Festival.
So you'll be in there. You'll be in there. Okay, Linz. Talk
All
to
right,
you later.
Have a good show. Okay, guys. Bye.
Thanks.
Take
bye.
Aw, that's so sweet. Yay.
That's good. I wonder. Do you think maybe I made points with my family there?
I think you scored at least. Do you think that's double pointage too?
Yeah, I think
when
think
it's
that
birthday,
was good.
The points are doubled or something like that.
I don't know. I hope so.
I'll have to refer back to my point handbook.
So anyway, we were trying to feel what it is like for you, what your ideas and feelings about social anxiety. Yeah.
I'm saying that
Let's get back to the social anxiety.
As much as I want people to feel good and feel make them feel like it's, you know, appreciated, I think also like I have a really difficult time after, especially after a long show, like after a long set, like a 45 mm-hmm. minute set,
wow.
where I kind of just want to like you know, like chill for like not talk to anybody for, you know, 20 minutes or I don't even know, half an hour. Mm-hmm. And you just can't do that. Like, you can't just walk out and be like, well, you know,
yeah.
fuck y'all. I'm out of here. I need to go sit with myself and chant for a moment.
But don't you think, I wonder if you're giving yourself enough. This is what I'm thinking. I'm wondering if you give, you're such a generous person, and if you're giving too much away. Mm. If you give, like, you're more concerned. Like, what happens is, and, you know, I have had this feeling, you know, I hardly ever am on stage for 45 minutes, but I know what it's like when you come off stage and you're really like
zapped.
It's a really like, it's a fairly extreme moment mm-hmm. and it's personal to you because you don't think that, like, why should anyone give a shit? Because it's an experience that they had an experience, mm-hmm. like you had an experience, and everyone in the audience had the experience.
They don't know the internal dialogue that went on during all of that. And a lot of the time, that internal dialogue is insanity, fear, feeling like I'm messing everything up. You know, sometimes I'm on top
it's
of the
just,
world. It
it's just, you're
what,
lost. You're yeah. lost. It's like you're in an alternative universe for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to get back in it, mm-hmm. the normal universe. But the thing is that you can't really say to the people around you, oh, man,
yeah.
that was, you can't really talk about the experience because it's like,
yeah.
they don't want, you. The
Re-entry
feeling
is
they don't want to fucking hear like some artists go off on some bullshit, right? Isn't that the feeling?
Yeah, and I have gotten off stage before and then just said, like, what I feel like later is the wrong thing. Like, oh, you know, fuck that stupid set. I didn't feel good about it or whatever. They don't, like, that's not their baggage. They liked it. They enjoyed it. They had fun. That what they were like, what? And then they're like, why is she so upset? You know, it's,
oh,
you know,
I know. That's
if
happening
I
when
a
you
bad
think,
set.
You think
so
it's
rare.
Horrible and it's really upsetting. Yeah.
yeah so
but,
rare,
but it's an
but,
emotional
you know.
Roller coaster that you and every performer, I think,
yeah,
or should be
yeah.
just about any performer. Why do you think those rock stars take drugs?
Yeah, putting yourself
is on
there
a roller coaster, and then when you get off stage, you know, you've got to like just there's no downtime.
I need a softer reentry. What I find like with like, you know, real superstars is that they have like a green room that they can kind of like be like, all right, I'm gonna chill out. I'm going to go to the green room, and then everyone can meet me outside the door when I had 20 minutes to myself.
Or a costume, you know, take off my costume, something like that. That happens, too. I've even done that.
The costume buffer.
The costume buffer. But here's the thing. The thing is, Kelly, I don't think you're taking... This is my opinion, and this is like we have... Radio Free Brooklyn, it's Kelly Dwyer with Dr. Lisa. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. So we don't have enough time here. We have 20 minutes. So I'm just going to throw out some bullshit, and you see if it sticks.
All right.
Okay, so this is my feeling. My feeling is that you are so concerned with taking care of everyone and being a caretaker that you are not taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. So when you get off stage, and the reason I say that is because you're so generous about posting opportunities for people and helping. You are that. And that is like something that you're great at, and it's a gift, and you get a lot of positive reinforcement for. But I'm just wondering if it's getting in the way of your taking care of yourself. So you get off stage, right? Mm-hmm. And then you feel like you have to give more, but what you really need to do maybe is take care of yourself and say, you know what, I'm going to go out and have a cigarette and don't have a cigarette. Or let me go out, get a bottle of water. Or, hey, I'm so glad you came. I'll be back in a few minutes. Go to the bathroom. Just, you know, like take care of yourself and forget about everybody else.
Right.
Because for you, that's what you need.
Yeah.
And that's what you need.
And crazy enough, also along with that, it's interesting that you say that, is I'm like, yeah, it's a simple solution. It feels like a simple solution. But then I'm like, yeah, but I also, during that time, just after my show, I generally have like a t-shirt and a CD and a, you know, paper dolly to sell.
Oh, I see. So it's not practical.
So it's like, oh.
That's not practical.
It's not. And then, of course, you're going to interact so hard with, you know, and then you're like, oh, I feel like I'm like hustling. And then also I'm feeling like I'm like, want to talk to everybody, and I want to give people their time.
So you just, that's just not practical.
So I'm going to be a hermit, and I'm going to move to Grand Cayman, and
scuba diving. Another way to think about it is not taking action. And just, like, thinking, maybe here's another thought, like thinking to yourself, I'm really grateful these people came, and I'm not going to, like, worry about what I say to, like, just say whatever you want to say, do whatever you want to do,
right,
and not be self-conscious at all without drinking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to give yourself the permission to, like, I'm just going to say whatever I'm going to say, and it might be really fucked up, and it might be stupid. I know it's not going to be mean, because I don't have a mean bone in my body. Lisa Levy told me that.
there's a femur.
No, that's
there's
not
definitely
true.
One or two.
Yeah, I'm sure if you
there's,
had a good reason.
There's a tibia that
you could pull it out.
Disagree with you.
You could pull it out. You could pull it out, for sure. So if somebody fucks with you, yeah, of course. But, you know, like, you know, those people are there for you, and you're not going to, you know what I mean? Like, just to say, like, I think you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. Do you think?
Yeah,
does that make any
probably.
Sense?
Probably, yeah.
And I'm also wondering if you have, like, a need to really take care of other people, if that's something from your childhood.
Yeah, I think.
Where did that come from? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know, but I remember my dad saying, like, you have to be able to learn to let some moments go without worrying so much about you taking every single person, making sure every single person in the room is okay.
Or
something like that. And I was young, and I think it was, or making sure every single person in the room doesn't need to like you, or something like that. You know, like, I think maybe it does all stem back to, you know, do people like me? And is that, like, everything? Is that, like, what we're all made of is, like, oh, you know, whether you're on stage or you're off stage or you're in life, you know, it's like, is social anxiety any different than, like, you know, coming off...
Just being a planet.
Just being...
Well, I think, you know, I mean...
Oh, my God.
I have this,
so
believe
hard.
You me, I... No, I'll tell you something. I made a mirror, you know, make text on mirrors, and I wrote one the other day that said something like, people like you more than you realize, to myself. So believe you me, I think we're all in this, you know, I mean, it's a human, I think it's a human condition for sure, to, except for Donald Trump. Oh, I said his name. but the thing although he's probably the most insecure person there is, but
probably.
The thing is, though,
tiny penis.
Is that I wonder if he has one or has any of that. But the thing is that I think this whole social media thing has really created a lot more anxiety because. Mm-hmm. It's actually sort of expanded your world of acquaintances. So when you see the people in person, there's like even our meeting right here today, you know what I mean? Like,
this is a good point.
I had a good feeling about you and, you know, whatever. I've been in your presence enough to believe that my instincts are good, but... Well, and I have an even better feeling about you now that we've spent 45 minutes together. There are many, many other people that I come in contact with that I am I want them to like me because maybe they have influence or maybe because I think what their work is cool or whatever, or they have nice hair. And I want them to like me. So when I see them in person, I have more pressure to get them to like me.
Yeah.
And since I don't really know them, I don't even know what their idea of liking somebody looks like.
Yeah, it's wow, this is like it's a deep thing, I think. I think it's a complicated.
It's
got a lot of layers of stuff, and you bringing up the social media aspect of it is really interesting because anybody who's younger than 30, I guess I would say, has always kind of had social media in their lives.
Right.
And, or maybe it's a little less than that, maybe 26 or 25.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've grown up with it.
Growing
they've gone through adolescence with it.
We went through more than half of our lives without any kind of thing like that. And so we're in this weird place. Mm-hmm. And then there's our older people that really just don't even deal with social media. So like,
yes,
we're in this middle spot where we've been exposed to it. It came into our lives very later, halfway through our lives, and it's very jolting and very useful and on many levels really wonderful place. Mm-hmm. However, I do find, and this is a true story, when I wake up in the morning and if I go immediately to Facebook, my stomach hurts immediately.
Yeah.
I've been taking a week off a month from Facebook.
Oh, that's good.
That's been really great. So,
see, you're vulnerable to that, and I wonder if it's something from your child. I think it's old. I don't know. It could be in your nature. Might be so deep in there that you can't do anything about it.
Grade school was sort of like, I was definitely an outcasty type.
Were you made fun of?
I was really made fun of. I was teased a lot.
I bet. Yeah, me too. I get it.
You know,
Yeah, you're a weirdo.
John Whitmore de-pantsed me in front of my entire eighth grade class at our Halloween party.
That's horrible.
Whitmire, that's his last name. Just want to make sure I throw that out there. So if he's listening.
He's an asshole.
Oh, he's, you know what? He friended me on Facebook and I accepted.
Really?
And,
really?
I'm super,
let's harass him.
I've always thought about, like, you know, I don't know what his life's like now. I mean, maybe he turned out to be a really nice person and, like, he was just a total asshole to me for a long time. You know, like, people, we're all different now than we hopefully, I mean, and yet it's very similar in, I'm sure, in many ways. But, I mean, I turned it around. I mean, part of the reason I was different and weird and outcast, you know, and got made fun of, you know, that's what I appreciate about my life, not being made fun
of.
Right,
of course.
But being standing out and being unique and all the things that you kind of really want as a performer and an adult. You know, you don't want to be like everybody else. I don't want to tell the same joke that everyone else is telling. And I want to tell have my own perspective. So I think, you know, as much as I'm pissed at John Whitmire still, I think, you know, obviously I try to accept that, like, that's part of why I am in my unique uniqueness.
Yeah. Yeah, you grew out of it. Made
so
you
thank
be,
you,
it,
John Whitmire, for so do you me in the eighth grade.
How, do you ask, let me ask you this. Are you good at making demands or asking people for things? Do you do that in your life?
If I do it, if I do it, it's you sometimes somewhat inappropriately. It seems like I'm a little brash about it, and it's almost
you're uncomfortable with it. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. Like,
you don't
feel
like
I don't deserve a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
Like
yeah. I'm getting that. That's so absurd. That's crazy. But yeah. You know what? I mean, I hear you. I mean, I'm there. I get it. So you know, so you're afraid to ask for, well, I interrupted you.
By the time I am pushed so far that because I haven't asked, by the time I get to the place where I have to ask, it comes out as a demand that's sort of, I sound
aggressive
or angry or...
Yeah, because you kept your mouth shut and then you got too uptight about it. I do that too.
I'm resistant to asking.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And it's as simple as, hey, can you give me 5 minutes so I can chill and then I'll come back and talk to you? It's as simple as asking.
I don't even mean with your friends. I mean, what comes to my mind is how I sucked at asking for a raise at work. I mean, anything out in the world.
Yeah.
So, I'm wondering if you... Did that have to do with your parents or?
My mom had a very difficult life up until she met my father. She had a very, very hard, actually her mother died when she was 13. Mm. Her stepmother tried to, you know, kill her with a steak knife. Mm. She ran away from home at 16 and lived in a barn, on the property where she was a babysitter.
That's not funny. She's a fucking survivor.
I keep wanting her to write a book because it would be a page turner, I'll tell you. There's so many things that I don't want to tell all of my mother's secrets, but like she had a really hard life. And so I felt always when I felt something was hard, and I was also diagnosed bipolar pretty young, but when I felt something was hard, I felt bad for thinking that because of how much harder my mom's life was. So I felt like I had to push, and to a certain extent, I think my mom made me feel that way. I don't think it's just like I felt that way.
I can imagine. Yeah,
like, she's like, why are you so depressed? You know, you have nothing to be depressed about. You know, like
sure.
Stuff like, you know, but you know that wasn't really her fault. I mean, that's just her experience and she's just giving me what you know. She was just saying, toughen up because life is hard and you can't wallow into it like that. You know.
Okay, when you say. You know, you were forgiving of her, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's great, and I believe you. But I also wonder if there's some real anger there because I felt anger on your behalf, and I'm just saying this. I'm not saying I don't want to assume your feelings at all, but I'm saying that if you're depressed and you say that to your mother and she comes back with that, well, she's right, of course, and it makes you feel compassion for her. Mm-hmm. But the point is that you're not getting your needs met because depression is real. And, you know, even if it's like, you know, you don't like the way your hair color came out and you're like super upset about it, maybe you're 16 years old. That's depressing, and the way that you just presented that to me, and you glossed over how forgiving you know what she did, which it really in a certain way is not ideal parent, that she didn't honor your feelings.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if you have some anger at her that you are sort of putting into you or not letting yourself have, even though you may not feel like intellectually it's justified, but it's real, and I'm telling you it makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, who, you know, I mean, this is I wouldn't call anything a classic case, but I mean, I definitely feel that, and we, as much as I'm like my mom, I mean, I'm just so much like her. I look like her. I sound like her. You know, I look in the mirror, though, especially as I'm getting older. Like, it's just crazy, you know, what I
see. That's so funny.
And then I'm like, oh, I see so much of myself. I see so much of the way that I sometimes feel, you know, I can be, I don't think I'm judgmental. I think I fight constantly against myself to not be judgmental.
Oh.
Like my mom. Like, I know, I'm like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be judgmental. I don't want to say, you know, oh, you're just depressed because you're just depressed. You know, you can't just, You know, like, I don't want to ever say that to
anyone
else.
But we want you to be the most Kelly you can be, because that's what we love. We love Kelly. We want Kelly to be the most Kelly she can be.
I'm going to Kelly all over the place.
Yeah, we gotta go for the big Kelly, the Kelly beyond the Kelly behind the Kelly.
Speaking of which, I hate to.
Oh, I was gonna say we only have 5 minutes, so
find
I want to
out more.
What?
You can find out more if you
attend. Now Kelly has like a million things coming up. So, and also give to Patreon. Go to radiofreebrooklyn.com and give us some. Just like even like 25 cents, 25 cents a week. Like there's no amount too small. So Kelly's got like a million things coming up. What do you have, Kelly?
I have on the, I was going to look at my little thing because I wrote it out.
Oh, see, I told you she's so pro.
This coming week is the Anti-Folk Festival, which is an amazing every night at Sidewalk Cafe in the Lower East Side, which has been there for 20 years, leading the anti-folk scene, which is, you can't say a lot of things are still here 20 years later. And they are, it's a great place to see work and see art that's interesting and unique and fun. And that is August 17th. I'm playing at 7 p.m., although it's every night through, I believe, the 18th. And then on the 18th, I'm at Bitchcraft, which is really a great show. It's Lauren Maul and Selena Kopic. And it's just a hilarious little romp, like a little variety, old school kind of piano-driven fun. Just fun.
You know what?
You
know what? The things that are hardest to explain are always the best.
Characters,
that's true.
And just silliness and very talented. Everyone's very talented always on that show. And that's at 17. And they moved the show. And this will be the first one at Sid Gold's.
Such a great place.
It's so cool. And it's good. The show's going to just fit perfectly right into there. And I'm excited. And then last, I just want to say August 22nd. Now the original New York City talent show is back.
I know.
If you recall it, some of us do. We're older people. It was one of the greatest open mics in New York City history. It was at the Old Bowery. And now it is at, where is it? What is it? Footlight. Footlight.
Were you there Monday night? I wish I'd been there.
I couldn't make it on Monday. And so that's sad.
Was that because you were out drinking? No. No,
that's
did you have a gig?
I was not out drinking. No, I was actually shooting a new video my song Poison, which is about body image. Body image issues and
you were working. You were working. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of shooting for that right now. So
great. So you'll have some new videos.
I'm excited to release that. I think it's gonna be great. I'm working really hard to put stuff online constantly, because that's the other hustle that I have in me, is that I believe that people outside New York City deserve to see this sort of niche New York thing that's happening, and I want to share it with them, and I want to share my work that way. So I really appreciate you having me on, Lisa.
Are you kidding?
I mean,
it's been my pleasure.
Yes,
I also want to get in that, you know, Radio Free Brooklyn is having a benefit on the benefit concert on September 10th. We have to remember that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so go to the Radio Free Brooklyn page and get in on that. You should come to that. Yeah.
I'm going to be in freaking Vegas.
What are you doing?
My family lives in Vegas. Can you believe this?
Did not know this.
I'm from Ohio, but they my brother and his wife and their kids live.
Are you the only showbiz person in your family?
I am, although my cousin is running on the Democratic ticket in Arizona as a representative.
Really?
That's kind of showbiz, don't you think?
Yeah, showbiz and politics are definitely one in the same right now.
Brandon Dwyer. Vote Brandon Dwyer.
He's got a good politician name.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Let's give a shout out to Dodge City. What time is that show?
Dodge City, I think it's from, I want to say from 6 to 7 on Friday.
Yeah? Okay, cool. Because Kelly's been on that. You can look that up on the RFB archives.
So many great shows on Radio Free. And Adelo's show is great. And I don't know.
The station is doing so well. The numbers are climbing.
Yeah. You can turn it on any time of the day and find something interesting going on.
Yeah, so. and just really... Yeah, like great music, all kinds of music, great talk, all kinds of talk. The variety is
the
really
the spice of life and the spice of
very exciting.
Brooklyn Free Radio. Hey, how did we harmonize just there?
I don't sing, so. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.